Hello and welcome to the Business of InfoSec podcast with me, Michelle Ribeiro. In this podcast, we chat to senior information and cybersecurity executives from a range of industries about their passions, experiences, and challenges. Without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into today's episode. Welcome to the Business of InfoSec podcast. This week's theme is, do you really understand cybersecurity or are you just doing ticking box exercise? Joining me today is Faisal Janif. Welcome, Faisal. How are you today?
Good, thank you, Michelle. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. So Faisal started his career at Commonwealth Bank of Australia as a part of Group Risk and moved into a junior cyber role. He has been in cybersecurity for over 20 years, from leading cyber within the business, and he has also led cyber consulting practice, which allowed him to gain experiences across a multiple of industries throughout APAC and additionally improve his skills in OT. That's very impressive, Faisal.
Thanks, Michelle. I've been in the industry quite some time.
Yeah. So before we jump straight into today's theme, Faisal, I'd like to ask you a personal question. You mentioned you love cars and you even race your car when you have time. That's very interesting. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, look, I've grew up around cars all my life, and it's become a sort of passion and a stress relief for me now. You know, working on your car on the weekends, you know, you get away from your emails and you get away from your phone. And, you know, when you do those track days, you're away from everything. And yeah, it allows you, as funny as it sounds, but it allows you a lot more time to think about other things as well, you know, outside of work. So it's, for me, it's not only a hobby, but it's a great stress relief as well.
Yeah, it does sound like that. And you would certainly need a bit of that in the cybersecurity field.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you look at all the changes that we've gone through and, you know, as you mentioned, my career started quite a while back. And, you know, to give you an understanding, you know, back then when I started, we still had the traditional antivirus, which was signature based, and you know, it was also great for known threats. And if you look at where that sort of come to now, where, you know, we have EDR, you know, with detection and response and, you know, containment, and we do triage, and now we're looking into XDR as well. So, you know, things have come a long way in that time, and there's been a lot of changes that have happened. So therefore, all the changes that we've experienced, the criminals are experiencing those changes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot has changed. And we certainly needed to find things to unwind a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And on that note, you mentioned you also like camping with your sons. So you do like adventures by the sounds of it. How do your sons enjoy camping with you?
Look, initially they didn't. You know, it was more about getting out there and doing things and getting away from the iPads and the TVs, you know. So initially it was a change, you know. My kids grew up around technology, you know, like every kid that's 12 years old and 6 years old. So, you know, getting out and about and doing things outdoors with them has created it's something different for them, but it's something that we grew up with. So, you know, take them fishing, go spend a day at the beach, do a bit of fishing, you know, do a bit of camping, just sort of get out and about and get them to do things and moving away from the screen. It allows them to see and do different things, as well as, you know, bonding time as well, and teaching them how to fish, and, you know, the look on their face when they do catch their first fish and things like that, you know, and you know, helping me cook and things like that. So it's great. It's fantastic. We're quite enjoying it.
Yeah, that's lovely. And I'm sure it's very, very high quality time that you spend with them.
Well, they got no other choice, right? I mean, it's me. They got no iPads. There's no technology there. You know, it's just me and the kids and doing things, you know. So we're always trying to do things together to keep us occupied, and me trying to teach them bits and pieces of things that I learned growing up in from my childhood. So it's a great time. Quite enjoying it.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds like an amazing time. So now let's go ahead and talk about what we came here to talk about today. I'd like to start by asking you, Faisal, if you could share a little bit about your experiences with cybersecurity strategy.
Yeah, definitely. Look, cybersecurity strategies they're talked about quite a fair bit, right? You know, we need a cyber strategy or we have a cyber strategy. Right. But generally, you find in most organizations that they have a cyber strategy that was built quite some time ago. Right. No one's ever paid a lot of attention to it. No one's ever actually fully executed the strategies or really understood, well, how should it be? Right. And what we're seeing is cyber strategies are just that. Cyber strategies, right? So, you know, we need to implement DLP or we need to implement a PAM solution, or, you know, we might look at going to cloud for our PKI solution instead of on-prem. Yeah, these things, and, you know, we want to get a SOC and a SIEM, and, you know, there's a whole bunch of things around training and awareness, and then you have your whole password. So, you know, your strategy involves a lot of different variables, right? But where the gap is that the business is going in one direction, right? You know, they have their own corporate strategy on by 2025, we want the business to be in this space and, you know, we want to get ahead of our competitors and customer service is paramount and we want to do all of these things, right? And depending on the industry, if you're in energy, you might have a focus on renewable energy, right? And everyone's looking at smart things, right? So smarter way of doing it, machine learning, artificial intelligence, you know, all of these things are coming into corporate strategies. Where the gap is you've got to then understand, well, where's the IT strategy at, right? The IT strategy needs to be able to solution the business strategy with the relevant technologies for the business to achieve its goals. And then the cyber strategy should be working in tandem with IT to be able to secure all of that technology. So from the very offset, you've got a secure by design approach where you're working very closely with IT in order to understand what the technologies they're bringing in, what they're doing in this space, and then what security is required. In a lot of organizations, IT has their own strategy and they've got a number of projects going and cyber's got their own thing going and, you know, they're trying to do their own thing and the corporate's got a great strategy. And, you know, that's why certain things never sort of fully hit the mark, right? Because everyone's going in different directions. And from my point of view, if your cyber strategy is aligned with the IT, which is aligned with corporate, then funding cyber should be a lot easier because you're able to justify your expense. You know, when you get asked by the CFO, well, you know, you want $4 million, can we cut it down to two? The answer could be, well, what we're doing is helping you execute on your strategy. So this is where the corporate strategy is by 2025. IT is going to be implementing this technology and we need the budget to secure it. Otherwise, you're going to be moving ahead with unsecured technology, which is going to leave you vulnerable. And with everything that's happened last week with all the attacks, you know, a vulnerable state is not where you want to be at. And if you have a look at sort of what's now come on board and the responsibility of a CISO is quite a lot, right? I mean, like in reality, when an organization gets hit with a cyber attack, right, no one goes to the CFO and says, well, hey, you cut their budget in half, right? You know, would that have made a probable cause in terms of the cyber attack that we've just experienced, right? It's always going to the CISO and saying, well, you're responsible for security. How did this happen? Right. And that's a question. And in order for the how, you know, the execution of the strategy is important, right? Because You know, you don't ask for a budget just for the sake of it. That's the first thing. If you don't have the proper strategies in place and the alignment, then you're going to be missing out on a lot of projects that are happening, right? And it depends on the structure of your organization. Now, in most cases, organizations have an ARB, which is an architectural review board, right? So what this means is when the business goes in and says, hey, IT, we want to do this, right? IT then goes away in solutions. It builds out the architecture, what it looks like, and then the architectural review board has a look at it and they either approve it or turn around and say, look, we don't agree with these certain parts of it. You need to go and revisit these and come back when they're done, right? In order to make sure that it's implemented properly for the business to be able to use. Now, cyber needs to be sitting on that board, right? So we need a security architect or a head of cyber or the CISO sitting on that board, right? Reviewing that architecture and saying, this is how the security overlay looks like as well. Right, so you have your technology architecture and then you have your security architecture, right? And that's how it should be, right? So, you know, you're securing it from the very word go. By having all three strategies link in, it gives the CISO a lot more visibility in everything that's happening, right? Because everything needs to be aligned and built and secured. So, you know, cyber isn't an afterthought because it could extend the project or add additional cost to the project. Right. So, you know, we're building everything from the word go in and having that collaborative, secured approach to any new technology that's coming in.
Yeah, some very interesting insights on aligning all the three pieces together. Now, can you expand on the risks of ticking boxes in cybersecurity? What are the implications for both the organization and the CISO?
When we start looking at a tick box exercise, right, we talk about implementing cybersecurity controls, but it's not done properly. Right. And so when you have someone come in and run an audit or do an assessment or do a health check, whatever you want to call those things, they're able to come back to you and say, you have this done. Right. And a great example is DLP, data classification, right? You spent a lot of time, you know, understanding which is the correct DLP tool to use because it's quite a fair bit out there. And then you run those proof of concepts in your environment and then you work out, okay, so out of these three, we're going to pick this one. And you've, throughout the whole change management process is, to me, one of the key aspects of the whole thing, right? Because that's where a lot of communication goes out. That's where you need to have a lot of training for staff, right? And they need to be aware of how to use these tools that you're implementing. Because the people that you're rolling it out to, if we sort of break it down, you got 25%, and I'm being pretty generous with these numbers, right? So you got 25% that are tech savvy, right, we'll understand, okay, so I get what they're trying to do and I know how to use it, right? I understand technology. 50% will be pretty average, right? They get the idea of it. They'll read it, but they might not fully understand it, but they'll have a look at it and trying to figure out, well, what do I do? And then if it's difficult, it goes in the too hard basket, don't worry about it. And then the other 25% is, you know, very limited technology capability. So they'll start probably reading it and quarter of the way through think it's too difficult, really don't need it, forget about it, right? So you need to spend a lot of time on the 75%, right? You need to understand who are the 25% and then focus on the 75% in order to provide more training, more awareness, more documentation in terms of very simplistic step-by-step guide of what you need to do and why you need to do this, right? Because in most organizations that we're seeing is when things aren't being implemented like DLP appropriately and properly, right? So you've spent a whole lot of money on implementing a tool which is then used by 25% of people, that leaves 75% vulnerability, right? Therefore, you're not getting the full extent of the security measures, the benefits out of that tool, right? So you spent a whole bunch of money on it. You spent a whole bunch of money on training and effort, but because it wasn't done properly and it wasn't implemented properly, and that's the part where I mean implemented, is that it's not at a stage where everyone's using it, right? Even though the tool might be in your environment. So your vulnerability is still there, right? And, you know, we have firewalls. Everyone has firewalls, right? You know, do you have a firewall? Yeah. You know, we got the best one. We got X firewall, right? But, you know, when was the rules last visited, right? You know, firewall rules need to be constantly updated and checked, right? And then you have to get rid of the old ones that you don't need. And, you know, that's what I mean. You know, it can become a tick box exercise where, you know, we've got, you know, this fantastic EDR capability on our endpoints. We got, you know, firewalls on the front and back, and we've got, you know, great encryption, and, you know, we're doing all of these great things, and, you know, we're investing a lot of money to buy the best tools. But how well is it implemented? Do you understand what's there? You know, it's becoming a tick box exercise where a lot of organizations really don't understand the effectiveness of what they have, right? And, you know, as I say, you know, when you get audited and they go through it, you know, you have all of these great things in place, but if you haven't implemented it properly, if the effectiveness is low because it hasn't been constantly updated, rechecked, and then double checked, right? Your vulnerabilities are still quite large. And the thing that you have to understand is the same tool that's been sold to one of the top merchant banks globally, right? A small business turning over $50 million a year can get the same tool. It's how you implement it and what then gets done, you know, in order to make that tool responsive to what you need it to do. And one of the other great examples are SIEM tools, where, you know, a lot of companies think, you know what, we'll throw all our data in there so they can check everything, right? But that's not the most effective way of doing it. Right? A lot of organizations think, you know, we have a SIEM tool, you know, we have monitoring capabilities and we can do it ourselves. And then come 5 o'clock, everyone goes home on a Friday afternoon. Well, who's monitoring, right? You know, the detection capability becomes skewed, right? Because you're not really understanding, well, the benefits of 24/7 monitoring to business hour monitoring. Now, if your organization is at a level where just business hour monitoring is appropriate and sufficient, that's fantastic, right? But, you know, cyber attackers don't always attack at your convenience.
Yeah. Usually not.
No. They pick some of the worst timings, right?
Definitely. And not only if you're not implementing it properly, that is also, it's not only ineffective, but it could also be very costly. Can you tell a little bit about the potential costs of, if we can call it an approach, but of adopting this approach?
Well, that's a difficult one, right? Because it sort of becomes, well, how long's a piece of string, right? So if you start to look at, you know, the cyber attacks that have happened, in some of the major companies that have happened to, they got quite a large cyber team, you know, and the team does quite a fair bit, right? But the hackers, their job is to exploit any vulnerability that they can find, right? Our job is to close any vulnerabilities. By not really understanding the effectiveness of the tools that you have in place, you are leaving some doors open, right? If you have a look at, you know, let's just say zero trust. If you don't implement it properly, right, you know, you and the easiest way for me to explain it is, you know, you live in a nice big mansion somewhere on the, you know, eastern seaboard on the ocean. You know, you've got a number of doors at the back that all opens up, and front doors and windows to take, you know, into account all of this beautiful view. And you're going out and you lock every single thing except one window. Right, so 95% of your house is locked down except that one window. That burglar is going to go and check every single window and door and find that 5% and open it and get in. Right, so our job is to try and close every single window. Right, however, even if every single window is closed, you can still break a window and get in, right? So you'll never be able to stop a cyber attack, right? If they really want to get into your environment, they will. But what you're doing is you're making it very difficult by closing all the doors, right? And, you know, the impacts of how effective our controls are, how we do our backups, you know, the security around our email, the encryption in transit and at rest, everything that we take into account, because cyber risk isn't just a line item. I always say it's like a pack of cards and each card has a cyber risk. And when you throw it all out, you see it all laying there and you sort of work out, well, okay, which ones do I focus on first? Which are my high priority? And the cost of these could be anywhere from, you know, something quite small, from a $20,000 invoice being paid or a $50 million ransom being held against you, right? We don't know, because a lot of the times, the biggest problem is that the cyber attackers, they have an advantage over us because they know what tools we're using to a certain extent. And what I mean by that is, if you go in and you do your research on firewalls or, you know, detective capability tools that are out there or access management tools that are out there, you can go and see all the vendors that are out there. You can go and see what all the new things the vendors are doing and all of this great technology that they're bringing in. And you can see all that. It's all online. It's all on their web pages. You know, they want to showcase how good they are, how effective their tools are. So the criminals are getting a firsthand look at what they're dealing with. But we don't get to see that until we've been attacked and we know we've been attacked. And then we do the forensics investigations and then we realize, wow, that's a new version of ransomware that we didn't know existed, right? We don't have a website where we can go in and see what the new versions of ransomware that they're doing, but they have websites that they can go in and see the new tools and software that's coming out and how all these detective and protective capabilities that are out there in response. So we're always, in my opinion, behind the back foot. So we have to be more vigilant than these guys, right, in protecting our organization, in detecting on there. Because if you look at cyber attacks, a lot of the times when you're hit with a ransom or a data breach, that's when you actually figure out that you've been hit. And if you look at, say, a ransomware, for the criminals to be able to steal that data or encrypt that data, they've been in your system for a while because they have to locate where that data is. Right, they don't just go in there and open a door saying, there's all the data, let's just take it. They have to find it. Once they find it, they have to take it. And when you take it, it's not something that's instantaneous. Taking that amount of data takes a bit of time. Encrypting that amount of data takes a bit of time. So by the time you find out you've been hit with a ransom, these guys have been in your environment. So, you know, from my perspective, we just have to really make sure that we close as many doors as possible, right, to make them getting into our environment as difficult as we can.
Yeah, for sure. That's not an easy job.
No, and that's why we need headcount, which there's shortage of. We need a lot more funding, and we need a lot of support from, you know, the board, the executives, in helping us drive that change. And, you know, we've now seen, you know, from a federal government point of view, we've got a minister for cybersecurity. So we're seeing government really, you know, take notice, because it's the first time we've had a minister for cybersecurity officially. And, you know, organizations now are starting to take notice, because, you know, this, I always used to ask the question, what's something that always goes up but never comes down? And the answer to that was your age, right? But I'm now thinking of, you know, adding to that, cyber attacks, right? Because every year it just keeps on going up and it's never coming down. So age and cyber attacks.
Now, can you share some practical and some real life examples of when things go terribly, terribly wrong?
So I always say, cybersecurity is not just technology, right? It's people and process. And when you do not have appropriately trained people in cybersecurity, and what I mean by appropriately trained is, if you look at training and awareness, right? If you don't do it properly, it's a tick box exercise, right? But, you know, in a lot of organizations where staff can go in and, you know, do that security training, and then they'll fail the question session and they'll just go back and do it again and again and again until they pass, right? You know, there should be limits, because if you fail once or twice, then you need to be pulled out and have additional training provided. So business email compromise is a massive, massive issue, right? And, you know, I have worked in organizations where, you know, funds were accidentally paid to the wrong business, and no one knew about it until another 30 days later, when, you know, the beneficiary called and said, hey, where's our money? You know, we still haven't received it, you're 30 days late. And then all of a sudden alarm bells ring, right? You know, I've worked in organizations where, you know, we've tried to implement MFA across all critical applications and the budgeting never allowed it to happen, and then when we're hit with a cyber attack, all of a sudden all the money and support and everything comes through. But, you know, it's fantastic that it has, but, you know, if it was 6 months earlier, we could have prevented what we're going through now. So, you know, prevention is better than cure. You know, it's better to be proactive than reactive, and in a lot of organizations we're seeing there's a lot of reactiveness to cybersecurity, right? Because for some reason, and I still haven't figured out why, the picture that's painted isn't truly reflective of the security of the organization, right? And when we start to look at digital transformation that's happening, right, and the convergence of ICT and OT, right, our threat landscape has increased dramatically. And if you have a look at last year, there was a number of cyber attacks on the OT environment. And, you know, there's a number of different ways of getting into the operational technology environment. And a lot of the clients that we do speak to around cybersecurity, you know, around your maturity, your investment, a lot of them don't think that it's going to happen to them. You know, there's still a lot of businesses out there that believe it's never going to happen to us. Right. And that's one of the biggest misconceptions. By thinking that, then you start to become a bit more relaxed and your spending starts to become a bit more relaxed, and then you get hit with a cyber attack, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have that oh moment, and you realize, okay, so we need to start investing. Then you start to put more money into it, but then you have another oh moment. Well, yeah, there's a resource shortage. Who's going to be able to help us? All right, let's go out to consultants. And you go out to the consultants and they might turn around and say, yep, you know, we're happy to help you, but we can get started in about 8 weeks or 9 weeks. And you think, well, I needed you yesterday. Well, you can't, because we have all of these other people that we're trying to help. And we're in the same position as staff shortage as well, because there's a cyber skills gap, right? And I think recently on Channel 10, they said in the next couple of years, we'll be looking at about 36,000 headcount in Australia alone. So there's a lot that's happening in this space. So I do encourage all organisations to be proactive and really start to understand their environment and, you know, identify what's going on and what you need to protect. Because now age and cyber attacks are the only two things that never come down, and they're always going up. So when we start looking at the reality of it, organizations are struggling, and you're seeing that, in the last week or two, you know, with the major cyber attacks that have happened in a number of organizations, that the outburst from the public that were whose data, whose identity, you know, were affected, is something that you might not be able to capture when you have these discussions, right? You know, you might not, you know, when you're trying to understand, well, what are the impacts? You know, a lot, and we've spoken to a number of organizations where we've done the exercise and said, well, if you have a ransomware attack, what are the impacts to your organization? And one turned around and said, not much, we can get it all sorted with about 250 grand. And you sort of think back and you think, well, that's probably less, the forensics costs would be higher than that. You know, how do you think you're going to get that done? And then when you sit down and actually go through how the ransomware comes into your environment, what it does, and then they sort of realize, yeah, you know, I think we need more than 250 grand, right? So there's a lot more education that really needs to happen in this space, and a lot more understanding needs to happen in this space, because we need to get out of that she'll be right attitude.
Yeah, absolutely. Education and awareness is very, very important, very critical. Do you have any other recommendations for CISOs when they are trying to mitigate vulnerabilities?
Look, the first part of it really, in my opinion, when I do talk to CISOs and we start to have similar discussions, is, well, you've got to really understand the risk, right? You know, you've identified what are your top 10 vulnerabilities, but how do they map against your corporate risk, right? Because your corporate risk, your high, your medium, your lows, you know, the amounts that are tagged against each one of these, so the red, amber, and greens, these are board approved, right? They're agreed from the very top that this is what our risk rating looks like. This is what we can absorb, somewhat tolerate, and not tolerate at all, right? So, you know, you need to understand your vulnerabilities and actually where does it fit into these parts? Because, you know, and I keep on saying this, cyber isn't a line item on the risk register. You know, your end of life, end of systems, hardware and software, where do they actually fall into this place? Right? You know, because in OT, you have a lot of these legacy systems that are clunky and still running because you can't replace them. You know, no one's making that hardware anymore, right? So, you know, you can't run pen testing and vulnerability scanning the way you can in your ICT and your OT. So if you're a CISO and you're looking after both, then there's massive amounts of responsibility and a lot of different conversations. But you need to really understand your IT risks and where does it fit into that risk register, because that's how you're going to prioritize what needs to be done, and that's how you're going to be able to get the funding to be able to improve what needs to be done. Because when you go out there and say, you know, we need a PAM solution, and it's going to cost $1.5 million. Why do we need it? Is going to be the first, right? It's $1.5 million. Well, what? Because cyber spend, you don't see something physical come out of that spend. You know, you go spend $1.5 million on a Ferrari and you see that Ferrari. That's where my money went. But on a PAM solution, you're really not going to see it, right? So you need to have those conversations that, well, it's a high risk and this is where it sits on our risk register. And, you know, if we don't have this and we have a cyber attack, this could be the potential loss, because CISOs now need to understand the costs, right? You know, the cost of recovery, right? The cost of the vulnerability, right? The cost of your controls being at 50% effective instead of 90% effective. And we're now able to do those calculations and give them that understanding. So when you stand in front of the board and you talk about your vulnerabilities and what you need to fix it, you can have a more detailed, data-driven conversation instead of, you know, quite some time ago where we were standing up and using scare tactics, right? You know, the end of the world type situation, right? To get money to do things. But now the advancement in what we're able to do and the data we're able to provide really should be able to help the CISO community drive that change.
So, Faisal, what advice would you give to a cybersecurity leader who is trying to tailor their solutions to their environments?
Yeah, you need structured steps to follow. And what I mean by that is, you know, you need to understand where the business is going. That's the first and foremost, right? You want to align cybersecurity with where the business is going, because everything is mapped out against that, right? The technology that's coming in is to accommodate where the business is, where it's going. The risk appetite is around the business tolerance, right? You know, you have your DR, which is around business recovery capability. So cybersecurity needs to be able to link into all of this, right? So my advice is understand your whole business, right? Understand the environment you operate in. Because I'm a big believer that you don't need the best in class for everything to protect your organization, depending on the type of business you are, right? But what you need is appropriate level cybersecurity for your organization. And in order to have that, right, it might mean you might need the best in class tools for a couple of things, and in some you don't. Right. So you need to really understand your business, what you're trying to protect. And the other biggest thing is, which gets totally missed in most organizations, is the people aspect, right? Who, what are the types of people that you're working with, that you're dealing with, that, you know, need to come on board in order to make you a success? And when I mean by you a success, I mean what you're trying to do achievable across the business, because depending on the business you operate, you know, you could have corporate staff and field staff, right? So you need to provide different training to corporate staff to what you do to field staff, because they're doing something different, right? You know, they might be putting, having drones that go up a power pole to see what's up there or deep in the mine. So their training needs to be tailored to what they're doing, and they need to understand a bit more about drone security, where corporate staff probably never see a drone, won't need that bit, right? So it's all about understanding your business, your people, and then building that security around that part. So your whole of business and your whole of people, and it's got to be appropriate.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. It's about business, but also the people, as we spoke before.
Yeah, definitely.
So hackers and cyber criminals are becoming even more agile, as we spoke before, and even more sophisticated. When we are looking ahead, what are the biggest challenges you see coming up in cybersecurity leaders' paths?
The Gen Z. And, you know, again, and, you know, I'm coming back to people, right? When we start bringing in the next generation of people, right? And, you know, when we discussed, yeah, sort of my personal life at the beginning, you know, I said, you know, my kids grew up around technology. Well, so did the next level of people that are coming into your business. And so did the next level of cyber criminals that are there, sort of Gen Z, right? You know, you're going to have people that are coming in and say, I don't want a Dell laptop. I want to use my own, or I want a MacBook, right? And if you want that person, well, how do you make it happen, right? You know, that's what this generation's about, right? Flexibility. You know, I've never used an Android phone, so I want an iPhone. But your company's got a contract with Samsung, right? So, you know, what happens there? You know, you then start to think about bring your own device and MDM and all of these things, right? And then, well, how do you train these people, right? You know, unlike me, where I can't sit at a McDonald's and concentrate on any training, the next generation might be able to. And, you know, the next generation is, you know, they're happy to sit at Starbucks and do half an hour of cyber training here and another half an hour there and another half an hour, right? You know, these are the generations that are grown up with online shopping and iPads and all of this technology around them. You know, a lot of the technology that they use, we don't use, right? You know, I'd walk out of a pub and hail a cab, right? This generation, there'll be a line of taxis, but they'll be sitting in a pub waiting for their Uber to arrive, watching it on their phone, right? So, you know, when we start to look at what are the next risks, but we have to understand the next generation that's coming in our workforce, how they want to operate, and cybersecurity will have to adapt, right? You know, there's a lot of things that are done traditional ways in cybersecurity where we block a lot of things and you can't do this and you can't do this and you can't access this. We're now going to have to rethink of, well, you can, but how do we secure it? Because your organization wants to attract the best talent that's going to come out of the next generation. And in order to do that, you have to be adaptive how that next generation wants to work.
Yeah, absolutely. So how cyber can work around that and adapt to the next generation. It's 100%. Very, very critical. Just to wrap up, this has been an amazing discussion, but I'd like to ask you, what would you say is the biggest takeaway for our audience today?
I'd say the biggest takeaway for our audience today is to really understand that you have to be adaptive, right? Cybersecurity isn't one size fits all. You have to be adaptive. You have to know about the environment you operate in. You have to know about the people within your business. And your cybersecurity should be fit for purpose for your organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And that will help you stay more vigilant.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, because what you're doing is you're building cybersecurity for your business, what you're trying to protect, what your business does, where your business is headed, and the type of people in your business.
Thank you so much, Faisal. It has been an amazing discussion. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and your knowledge with us today.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you for having me, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
We hope you have enjoyed the Business of InfoSec podcast. Be sure to subscribe from whatever you're currently listening. Plus, if you're listening from Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving us a review. As always, you can find us and engage with us on social media, as well as on the Business of InfoSec website, where you can find this podcast, as well as other topical articles, reports, and videos. So, until next time. Take care.